In this present crisis, government is not the solution to our problem. Government is the problem.
This is the I Spy Radio Show.
You and I have a rendezvous with destiny.
Keeping an eye on big government.
We the people tell the government what to do. It doesn't tell us.
The trouble with our liberal friends is not that they're ignorant. It's just that they know so much that isn't so.
And now, here is your host, Mark Anderson.
If people don't start standing up, we are in danger of entering one-party tyranny, the American oligarchy, where the triumvirate of big government, big business, and big media rule with absolute power. Like communist China and all Marxist nations since the dawn of Marxism, if you're not part of the party, you will be excluded and ostracized. Oh, for now, they won't completely eliminate you, so there's at least the illusion they allow some opposition. But Democrat politicians have already and openly called for deprogramming of Trump supporters. Leftist pundits have been on big media calling for conservatives to be re-educated. Hey, leftists, if you have to re-educate someone, it means your ideas are so unattractive that you have to force them on someone else. But oligarchies like we're facing, like what you see in China, where you have to be an insider, a member of the party, to say what they want and believe what they want just to get ahead, strikes at the very heart of the American dream. Under a one-party oligarchy, it's not have a great idea or make a discovery or invent something never seen before. It's instead who you know and what political connections you have and whether they will allow you to pursue your dreams or just steal it for themselves. You no longer have the right or the ability to just go out and do it. You must beg permission. And if you're the wrong party, you must first beg forgiveness, pledge your allegiance and fealty before you beg for permission. And this is why socialism fails. Because of all the things socialism redistributes, redistributing hope is the worst. It takes hope from the many and gives it to the few. It's why socialism can't compete with capitalism, because capitalism gives people hope that if you can just come up with the right idea, the winning idea, a better way, you too can be successful. Right now, we need to gear up and push back even harder, because oligarchies never come down on their own, but a lot of little Davids can bring down Goliaths if they have faith and hope and are willing to find the right stones for their slings. I'd like to welcome back to our show the guest from last week, Justin Danhof. He's the general counsel and director for the Free Enterprise Project. Justin, it's great to talk to you again.
Hey, it's my pleasure, Mark.
Yeah, so last week we got some great feedback about the show. We talked with you about how you guys fight back against corporations that take anti-conservative actions, and you're pushing back against the liberal left-wing influence that the left has on some of these big corporations. This week, I'd like to focus a little bit more on the legal side of things and what people can do, but I'd like to start with the coming oligarchy that we're facing here. The Biden administration has announced that they're going to be prioritizing government contracts and aids for businesses owned by minorities and women. I mean, that's been the case for a long time, really. If you're a female and a minority, you get priority for government contracts, business grants, and other fundings. We'll be talking about the racial aspects of that with our next guest, Kim Herman of Southeastern Legal Foundation. But if contracts can be awarded or removed based on skin color and gender, can they also be given priority status based on party affiliation? I mean, are we into a new era of one-party rule a la China?
Well, it's interesting that you bring up China as the first example, right? because, of course, the way that big tech operates in China almost sets up a sort of equivalent to what we're seeing starting to occur here in the United States of America. And one very bright line example of that would be Apple and its App Store and the way that it operates in China. For those that don't know, if the Chinese Communist Party requests that Apple remove an app from its store, it does it. And it has profound effects. What apps have they removed? Well, things like the New York Times, for example, because it's a news outlet. And communicate specifically back when the Hong Kong freedom fighters were staging their last stand, if you will, for their independence, as China came in and really put the boots on the necks of those freedom fighters, The Chinese Communist Party asked Apple to take down communications apps that they were using and apps that they were using to get news and information. So just think about the evilness of that. So in that instance, they are a direct arm of the government of China, right? Of the communist government of China. Well, in the United States, it's certainly starting to look a little bit like that, isn't it? Right? We have leading authoritarian type politicians demanding, for example, that Apple take Parler down, which of course Apple then acquiesced and took Parler off its app store. They colluded, by the way, with Alphabet, the parent company of Google, which then took it off of their store. And then the coup de grace was Amazon, no friend of conservatives since the founding of that company, but more and more blatant about their hatred of conservatives. They disappeared Parler from the internet. I've been likening what they did through their, you know, Amazon Web Services and removing Parler from the internet to being a what George Orwell called in 1984 an un-person, right? So they're an un-business. And it's, and look, part of this, I think we on the right have some finger pointing to do for what's happened here, though. Because for the longest time, as groups like mine have complained about the censorship of conservatives on social media platforms, we've been told by the libertarian bent of the conservative movement, just go start your own. These are businesses, they're private, they can do what they want. You know, the libertarians just say, leave business alone. Go start your own. Well, Parler took them up on that. How did that work out for Parler?
Yeah, exactly right. Yeah, exactly right. So from fraudulent elections that will continue to be stolen to big government making big business and big tech more powerful, and in reverse, those sides reinforcing and defending big government, how do we start fighting back against this oligarchy?
Sure. So I think there's a couple of interesting angles that should be explored. First, I think that you know, Mississippi is working on legislation at the moment. I think state level legislation is really one way to think about how we tackle this issue. And that is perhaps we should develop private rights of actions for individuals in red states at this point, because let's face it, liberals are happy with the censorship that's going on. So in red states, get private rights of actions for individuals, organizations, businesses, what have you, that have social media companies take away their speech, because they control so much of the market for speech, and this is how so many companies reach customers.
So let me interrupt you for just a second. When you say private rights of action, are you talking like a class action lawsuit?
No, individual rights of action, right? So if Facebook takes down your site for purely political reasons, that you have under state law a right of action against Facebook in that instance, or Twitter or Google or whoever it is that is silencing you. Mm-hmm. But yes, class action should also be part of this. And the third angle that should be part of this is shareholder derivative lawsuits. When a company intentionally takes a politicized action, let's take Twitter as one example, by removing President Trump from their platform, and then their stock price dropped as much as 12%, there should be shareholders of all stripes that are angry about that and sue the company.
Absolutely.
Because this was not acting as a steward, which is the job of management and boards of publicly traded company. That's their legal fiduciary obligation.
Yes, so and from a business standpoint, you've essentially eliminated 45% of your potential customers. Okay, let's go ahead and take a break there. Come back, we'll have more with Justin Danhof of the Free Enterprise Project. Coming up, we'll be talking more about the fight against the coming oligarchy. And welcome back. We're talking today to Justin Danhof. He's the general counsel and director of the Free Enterprise Project. They hold CEOs and corporations accountable in response to the liberal left's outsized influence over corporate decisions. And Justin, going on to that last break there, you're talking about some of the legal things that can be happening. And in terms of these lawsuits that can be filed, does that then set precedent to then get this up in front of the Supreme Court to really make this firmly established as the law of the land?
So I think the most interesting path in that case to set some really strong precedent would be through the state's attorney general offices. And most all states are currently investigating the large players under antitrust as it is. And so what we would see out of those cases is likely different decisions based on the situs of the court, right, at the lower levels, at the appeals levels. So you're going to, and that's the best way to get to the Supreme Court is to have, you know, the Fifth Circuit say, no, Google hasn't violated any antitrust, and have like the Seventh Circuit say, yes, they have. And that split in the circuits would be the best way. So I think antitrust through state AG's office is likely the best avenue to get to the Supreme Court to have them hear a fully fleshed case of these large players under existing antitrust law. So we don't even need to set new law. The antitrust laws are there. They're on the books. We just need to have rulings in place against these big tech players, because this, listen, we're living in a time of tremendous untruth. And if Google is going to replace objective truth seeking with their subjective opinion of the world, man, oh man, that's a dangerous era. That's a dangerous era, Mark.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, I had an experience just like that this morning. I was trying to find out some more information about waters of the U.S. And I had remember reading a number of articles talking about the dangers of that. I had a hard time finding it on Google. In fact, I finally had to go back onto my own website and find the articles that I knew that had existed and found them that way. But I couldn't get a decent search result against the bad aspects of the waters of the U.S. that Biden is saying he's going to bring back. In terms of the big business and big government coalition that's happening here, you had an interesting interview with CBN News, and I'm paraphrasing here. You predict a return to Obama-era patterns where big government will team up with big business and big tech to all make each other bigger, more dominant, and more powerful. And here's the key point, quote, that growth is going to continually suppress conservative thought, conservative groups, and conservative individuals. And I absolutely agree with that. This is a step toward Chinese communist-style rule. But you also said this. What we're seeing is quasi-government action, which may lead to some liability for these corporations. So we just talked about the lawsuits against them but from a corporate side, what kind of liability are you talking about here?
Yeah, so you know that's a great paraphrasing, by the way. First of all, and I highly recommend folks take a look at nationalcenter.org. The full interview with Heather Sales of the Christian Broadcast Network is up there. But yeah, when you start taking action that is quasi-government, that is ipso facto, again, proof of the antitrust issues that we're talking about, right? So that by definition proves it. And for the listeners who may not, you know, be aware of what I was talking about in the first instance, I want to clarify or expand upon what I mean by big business teaming up with big government by giving one example. And you're going to be gaslit by the mainstream media, so you need to pay attention to this. When Obamacare was passed, it was passed and written at the behest of the large insurance companies and the large pharmaceutical companies. Yes. So Nancy Pelosi and President Obama were out there telling you that these were these evil companies that were terrible, and that's why you needed Obamacare to come save you. But those were the companies that were working with the administration to write all the legislation that gave themselves bailouts, that gave themselves risk corridors, that gave themselves great profits at the expense of small and medium-sized competitors. And so what you're going to see is the same thing, right? Apparently the Obama administration or the Biden administration is already looking at hiring one of Google's former lawyers to be the head of all of this when it comes to tech, right? They're not going to do anything to break up tech, but they're going to be calling tech evil while at the same time working with them to grow and expand and reduce your liberties. So you just have to be on the lookout. Anytime, you know, Biden goes out and says Amazon's too big, we need to, you know, crack them up or something like that, they're working with Amazon to make Amazon bigger. It's a big lie. It's exactly how Obamacare got passed. And this isn't even hidden, right? Like the lobbying reports are there to show that AHIP, the largest, you know, insurance collective in America, and pharma, the lobby for the pharmaceutical industry, they were the ones funding all of the Obamacare promotion. All of those advertisements on TV with the doctors with white coats, telling you Obamacare was going to save your life. That's who funded it. And that's exactly what we're going to see. If the media and the Biden administration is saying some big company is bad, they're working with them to do bad things to you.
Yeah, it's astonishing. So last week we had touched on the political targeting of people. For example, after a Trump administration person had joined the board of an airline carrier, the NHL, the National Hockey League, threatened to drop their contract unless he was fired. So if people get fired, if they lose contracts or they're harassed online, is there any legal defense against political discrimination in the same way there's a legal defense against religious persecution?
There's no federal protection. Should be noted first. And the second note is, this is why I say states need to start implementing these laws. About half of Americans live and work in a jurisdiction where there is a legal protection of some kind, but some of these are stronger than others. But again, half of Americans then live and work in a jurisdiction where there is zero legal recourse. And I mean none. Mm-hmm. Your employer can fire you for your politics all day long in half of this country. And so that's why the cancel culture is so concerning. And that's why states that don't have legal protections on the books for an employer taking an adverse action against you for your private political beliefs, we've got to get working on the ground at the state levels to get help close that gap.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, let's go and take a break there. More on fighting back against the coalition of big tech, big business, and big government after this. And welcome back. We're talking with Justin Danhoff. He is the general counsel and director of the Free Enterprise Project. And we'll put some links on today's show page on iSpyRadio.com, how you can find out more information about them. And maybe drop them a little bit of a donation there. They can certainly use your help as they try to fight back and try to defend your rights. So one big thing about big tech, President Trump has repeatedly called for the removal of Section 230 protections for Facebook, Twitter, and other big tech companies like Google and whatnot. If that had been removed, if Republicans had actually listened to him and had removed those protections, what would that have looked like?
Well, and working in the movement and knowing the legislative leaders that have been talking about this for some time, it was a very small, I won't even call it a ship. It was like a dinghy that there was leaders in the conservative movement that were pushing for that. Now there is a much, much bigger group of conservative leaders and politicians that believe that needs to occur, but it's not going to occur, obviously, under the current environment. And the problem therein removing Section 230 whole cloth would be the small and mid-sized companies that would get swallowed up. So you kind of have to carve it out delicately, where there has to be some sort of mechanism for market power. That if you're over X threshold of the total available market, the TAM, that then you lose your immunity, kind of a deal. Because otherwise, like the startups, like I mentioned, like the Parlors and the whatnots, they would have been swallowed up. And you don't want to throw the baby out with the bathwater. Sorry to mix too many metaphors there, but I think that we're a day late and a dollar short. I hate to say, Mark, it's not going to happen in the current environment. Folks should have been listening to President Trump on that issue much sooner. We were pounding that bandwagon, but again, there was too much resistance within conservatives to, again, at our own peril, leave business alone.
Well, I understand it won't happen with the current administration and current makeup of Congress, but if, say, 2022 changes things, Republicans retake both House and Senate, if they push through some revisions of the Section 230 and strip those protections away from Facebook and Twitter and Google, I mean, what would that open the door to? I mean, what would big tech then look like on the other side of that?
They would look like a team of lawyers, right? Because as they lose their immunity, the lawsuits would spring eternal. They just would, or they would decide maybe the censorship game wasn't something we should have been playing all along, and take their thumb off the scale of that aspect of it. I mean, those would be their two futures. They would have to pick one of those two paths that we want to keep. And look, come to our website, nationalcenter.org. Take a look at the work that we do. Facebook doesn't let us advertise. We're banned.
Hmm.
Google won't let us advertise. We're banned. Twitter, same. Take a look at our work and tell yourself, what are these guys doing that's so radical that those three big tech giants would censor their abilities? And the answer is, of course, nothing other than we have a different worldview than the leadership of those corporations in Silicon Valley. It's so, you know, folks who see it and say, oh, I don't care that that's happening to President Trump and whatever. It's not just President Trump. It's thousands of organizations and individuals that simply hold traditional conservative values and want to use the platforms to express them.
Hmm.
It's a lot more than just President Trump, folks.
Yeah, absolutely. So back to those lawsuits, I'm trying to envision what some of those would look like. Let me run this by you. So for a decade now, conservatives and Republicans have been submitting content and pictures and cat videos and commentary, whatever, to these social media sites. And because of the content they, the conservatives, have created on those sites, they gave others a reason to join and thereby increased Twitter's and Facebook's users, contributing then to the financial success of those companies. Now they're being deplatformed. Now they're being kicked off Facebook. A number of Facebook groups that I belong to have suddenly been removed. The walk away from Democrats campaign is being chief among those. So now that they're being deplatformed after helping increase their bottom line, is there some kind of legal remedy there that they can go after, saying, hey, you're targeting me, and yet I helped make you successful to begin with?
Yeah, I don't know that that would confer standing in that situation unless you were also an investor. So that's a curious hypothetical I haven't heard before, and I don't want to give you any false answers. So I need to think about that one. That's a good question, Mark.
Well, it does sound like the best avenue then is to buy a share or two. And that, you know, that's actually something we didn't talk about last week. You don't have to buy thousands of shares to submit a shareholder complaint or anything else. You can buy just a single share, right, in some of these in these companies in order to file some things, right?
A single share in order to show up and have a voice. There are higher thresholds for filing resolutions, but they're not terribly high. It's only $2,000. So
what happened? I mean, it is a good path then is for people that have just a few shares, don't have that 2000 shareholder threshold. Can they then join in with you as like a coalition of shareholders?
Absolutely. Absolutely. We would love that. And again, we're a tiny shop and there's only so many corporations we can go after. And there's so many bad corporate actors out there that, yeah, folks with portfolios surely bigger than ours, we'd love for you to come alongside us. Mm. And we'll carry your message into these shareholder meetings. We'll carry your values forward. We're happy to do that.
Great. Just real quick, something that Trump said that I think is rather prophetic. Back in 2016, as a candidate, said that libel laws need to be changed. And we just watched the biggest libel in our lifetime with politicians, their media echo chambers saying that Trump was responsible for the violence at the Capitol. They have as yet to put up any proof of that. Does being a private citizen change how Trump can fight back against these libelous accusations in big tech?
No, it doesn't. Even before he was a politician, he was too much of a public figure.
Hmm.
The public figure exception is it's pretty profound in Supreme Court precedent. They can get away with pretty much saying anything about a public figure. It's a very, 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 very high threshold.
Well, I still just have to wonder whether or not he's got something up his sleeve. Justin Danoff, I want to thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you, Mark. It's always a pleasure.
Kimberly Herman is General Counsel for Southeastern Legal Foundation, an Atlanta-based constitutional public interest law firm and policy center. Southeastern Legal Foundation's website is slfliberty.org if you'd like to go visit them. Kim, welcome back to the show.
Great to be here again.
Yeah, absolutely. So Joe Biden issued a bunch of executive orders to undo a bunch of President Trump's executive orders, which undid a bunch of Obama executive orders.
all around the country, you've got Democrat governors ruling through executive orders. It seems like we just don't have the rule of law anymore. I mean, we have a rule of whim, or at least rule by one. And maybe I wasn't paying attention enough in the 1980s and the 1990s, but how did we get to where executive orders are essentially taking the place of legislatures and actual law? I mean, does Constitution even really matter anymore?
Well, at Southeastern Legal Foundation, we certainly think that it does. But unfortunately, those on the left and sometimes, you know, even across the aisle, they don't seem to think that it matters. What we really have here is we have the administrative state, right? Mm. We've been talking about it for decades now. And under Obama, we saw it grow to, honestly, to extremes that we never even imagined. Mm-hmm. And we are, in one day, we now went back 12 years and then some. And now we have to be on a mission to just deconstruct this administrative state because it violates separation of powers. It violates our constitutional structure. And it's unlawful. There's no other way to say it other than it's unlawful and unconstitutional.
Yeah, it absolutely is.
Yeah.
So among the executive orders that Biden has already signed, and he's planning on a bunch more in the next few days, but among the ones so far are some that will weaken America's energy independence by getting rid of the KXL pipeline. He's looking at reimposing Obama-era environmental regulations, including rejoining the Paris Accords. And it says that he plans to reimpose the Waters of the United States rule, which effectively seizes control over all water in the U.S. and, as one trade group put it, could punish farmers every time a cow walks through a ditch. But what's troubling in all of this, and the common denominator, is that it's all about government control over the means of production and inserting government back into every bit of your life, as opposed to what Trump, as opposed to what had made the Trump economy successful, which was to get government out of the way. So are we in for a new round of crushing, job-killing regulations? I mean, do you see any other path than that?
I wish I could say I didn't, but I think you hit the nail on the head. In one day, we've seen executive orders that, I mean, take the pipeline one that you mentioned, for example, right? When President Biden, which it kind of pains me to say that, but when President Biden repealed the permit to continue building the pipeline, he essentially killed, I believe it's upwards of 10,000 jobs, they're saying, with just the swipe of a pen. I mean, it was one swipe. And can you, and think about how that's going to trickle through the economy.
Sure.
So yes, it comes down to fundamental of who do you think should be, I guess, in control. And the Democrats believe that they have all of the right answers. And at the end of the day, we know that their answers will only keep them in control. It will cede more control to them and take less control away from the individuals. It will infringe on individual liberties like we have never seen in this country. So, yeah, I mean, back to your jobs question. Yeah, it's going to kill significantly more than 10,000 of jobs. I mean, we're going to see, I think, the unemployment numbers just skyrocket.
Sure. I can't imagine they'll do anything about that. And, of course, on the consumer side, then you've got gas prices going up. So
exactly. Yeah, and we've also got, I mean, you also look at who we're going to be dependent on. Right. That's the other goal. It's a globalist view of what are we going to be doing? Getting our oil from Russia, from Venezuela, from the Middle East. I mean, one of the best things that President Trump did for this country was make us energy independent. Mm-hmm. And we are going to go immediately backwards. And the ramifications for that on national security are quite terrifying, especially talking to you as a mother of young children. I can't even imagine what it's going to mean for the world that they grow up in their prime years. So,
well, and it's not just the environment or the economy, but he's got executive orders out there on all sorts of things. One of the ones that we'll talk about coming up is he's getting rid of he's reinstituting critical race theory, and so that's going to have wide ramifications as well. But among the other executive orders, Biden wants to return to a money laundering scheme that existed under Obama. This is something that we had seen in a lot of our investigations when we were looking at environmental groups and whatnot, and it's essentially a slush fund payout. Breitbart had an article about this on Thursday. And so when a company is sued by the government and the government wins, it's on these environmental lawsuits or whatever that the government is suing them on, the government then had the businesses pay the fines that belongs to the taxpayers. They instead had the businesses pay those fines to a left-wing organization and nonprofit. So like NARAL or Defenders of This, Wildlife That. And of course, they all support Democrats. I mean, how is that at all legal?
It's not legal, because really what you end up having is sue and settle, right? So the way they actually create those, it ties in with the sue and settle idea. So the idea that the government goes in and sues one of these companies, and then the companies end up paying to settle the case, or else they get some sort of agreement, something that they can't get, actually get passed through law. And it's just a way, like you said, it's a way to launder money. It's a way to funnel the money into these groups without it actually being directly given. And so one of the ways that it can really be challenged is by intervening in those cases, right? So finding other people that have an interest in those cases and trying to stop those cases from being settled. If the government's going to go after them, litigate it and force them to actually hold those companies accountable for what they're suing them for. We know the government doesn't want to do that in those situations. But there are ways to do it, and the left has done that, and not that particular thing, but the left has gotten very creative in lawsuits over the years, and now it's time for us freedom-based law firms and those on the right to also recognize that we have to get involved, and we have to watch those lawsuits carefully.
I absolutely have to be paying attention. It's just amazing. An analysis by Peter Schweitzert showed that the program diverted $650 million to left-wing groups. I mean, I can't imagine that if Trump had diverted $650 to right-wing groups, Democrats would have immediately tried to impeach him. All right, Todd, let's go ahead and take a break there with Kimberly Herman. We'll come back and talk some more about racial justice. Welcome back. Kimberly Herman is General Counsel for Southeastern Legal Foundation, which is dedicated to advocating limited government, protecting American freedom, and defending individual rights. Their website is slfliberty.org, and we'll link that up on ismyradio.com as well. So, Kimberly, as we discussed with our previous guest, you can't fire or discriminate against people based on race, gender, health issues, or religion. But it turns out one exception is to discrimination is that it's perfectly okay to fire somebody based on their political beliefs. And I actually remember noticing that during my HR classes back in my MBA days. After all, Democrat political campaigns should never be forced to hire Republicans, and likewise for Republicans hiring Democrats. But those Catholics, they absolutely should be forced to hire and retain people who believe in abortion, gay marriage, and all the rest. That's okay. So, Kimberly, are we going to see a rash of firings coming up based on politics? I mean, is politics the new racism?
Well, we're already seeing it, right? We're seeing it when you look at those who were in the Capitol earlier this month and, you know, not sitting here condoning violence or fighting or anything like that. But speaking about the First Amendment piece of it is that even if you were seen in pictures peacefully protesting, even say miles away from the Capitol, there are people who are now being fired from their private jobs or from their public jobs, even if they work for the government. We've seen a number of those across the country where you may have a police officer who was there and he's now been fired from his job. So yes, I think that we've already started seeing it, and I think that we're just going to see it spread like wildfire right now, because We're living in the cancel culture, and at Southeastern Legal Foundation, we are doing everything to stop that cancel culture on a number of fronts and in a number of arenas.
You know, we were talking in that last segment there about the lack of constitutionality on so much of this, and we're just ruling by executive orders. You've got these unconstitutional shutdown orders. Stanford actually came out with a study recently that says they really don't work. Now here in Oregon, our own governor is trying to add to her power to seize property without restrictions during an emergency. And this bill, it would allow the Oregon governor to seize any private real property without compensation after an emergency is declared. I mean, this is just insane. One attorney here in Oregon said it's dead on arrival because it's unconstitutional. But getting back to what we said last segment, maybe. In this day and age, it just doesn't seem like the Constitution, whether you're talking state or federal, it just doesn't seem to be a guarantee of protection. But what's really frightening, I think, in this is, or concerning, is that our elected officials seem to think that this is the right of government to seize or do anything they want as long as they've declared that they can do it.
Yeah, a lot of them do. And we've seen that over the last, what are we at now? I can't even keep track. 9 months, eight, 9 months in this pandemic, and they seize more power and more power. And I saw what you were, what you're talking about that's being proposed in Oregon. And I agree. I mean, it should be dead on arrival, without a doubt. But unfortunately, what if she tries to do it? I mean, which she's going to, and she has now through executive order. Then it goes through, and then you have to file a lawsuit to challenge it. And fortunately, there are a lot of property owners that will stand up for their rights, and there's groups like SLF that can get involved and immediately bring those lawsuits. But we have to know what's going on, right? We have to hear from the people. And so I can tell you one of our biggest challenges right now is keeping up with everything that's going on throughout the country.
I bet.
And so, as your listeners are listening to this, if they know of more things like this, please, write to us, slfliberty.org. We're on Facebook also. We want to hear about these things so that we can get involved and that we can fight for your property rights and for your other liberties.
Well, yeah. In addition to some of the other liberties and, not being able to fire somebody based on their politics, but now you've got this race issue coming back. And one of the things that Trump had done was he had removed critical race theory, and now Biden wants to put it right back into the federal institutions. Christopher Rufo with the Discovery Institute said that critical race theory is illegal in his mind under the Civil Rights Act of 1964 because it creates implicit bias. Trump, as I said, had ended that on a federal level, but Biden is putting it back, and he's putting Susan Rice in charge of rooting out systemic racism. So are you guys part of that coalition to fight this? And if so, talk to us a little bit about critical race theory and how and why you're fighting this.
Yeah, no, I'm so glad that you asked about this, Mark, because just last night, Chris Rufo announced a new coalition that we are part of to stop critical race theory. And really what our primary goal is to kind of root out this default ideology, root out this anti-American sentiment and what's being taught in our K-12 and college and universities, and to kind of bring us back to reality, really. Because like you said, they are teaching, in our schools, they are teaching systemic racism. They are teaching that we are all racist, but in reality, they are teaching everyone to be racist. It's a very backwards idea. They're coming in with this critical race theory saying that, you are inherently racist. Everyone is racist. America is racist. If you are white, you are a supremacist. And they're making you write apology letters. We actually have a situation that Chris, through his investigative reporting uncovered and brought out where members of our government were actually being sent to re-education camps. If you were a white male in this agency, you were sent to what was called a re-education camp. Wow. And you were actually forced to write apology notes to women and people of color that were in your departments and in your offices, apologizing for being white and acknowledging your white privilege. They were required to do this.
That's
compelled speech if I ever saw it.
Oh, absolutely. What would their reaction be if you wrote and said, "I'm sorry, you're not a male"?
I'm going to guess they probably would have been fired.
Well,
most traces of it have been erased because it was part of an intelligence agency, and they've done a great job trying to erase it all so they don't see the evidence of it.
Yeah, and what's amazing to me is that people that push this don't see how they're actually the racist, is because you're assuming that other people are racist. Well, I'm sorry, and you're making a broad characterization against somebody like that because of their color. You're a racist. So,
yeah, and I think your everyday person is probably that way. But from a government perspective and the people that are pushing this, the Susan Rice's, the President Biden's, the you name it, you really can go down every single one of his cabinet appointees. They know exactly what they're doing. The idea of critical race theory is not to unite, which is a word that has been grossly abused over the last several weeks and months. It's to divide. If they can divide us, then they can control us. So that's absolutely really, right. Again, it comes all back to what you started out with, is they want the power. And yep. So how can they keep it?
Absolutely. And speaking of power and lack of unity, we're going to be talking about impeachment up next with Kimberly Herman, General Counsel of Southeastern Legal Foundation. Stay with us. Welcome back. We're wrapping things up with Kimberly Herman. She is the General Counsel for Southeastern Legal Foundation. Their website is slfliberty.org. That's slfliberty.org. And so, Kimberly, in the time that we have left with you, I don't want to talk about the impeachment. I mean, this is just astonishing what has happened in the last few days of the Trump administration. You've got Nancy's fast food impeachment, impeachment to your door in 15 minutes or less. She's saying now it's going to be going over to the Senate. Can you convict a president who isn't even a president?
That is the question of the day. So there's two legal camps in this. There are a number of scholars who have come out and they believe that you can. And then there are those of us who believe that you can't, and that not only is it foolish to do and to no end, but that the Constitution, the text and the structure and the history actually guide against it. Mm-hmm. There are two cases where this has been done, not with a president, but I believe it was back in the late 1700s and the early 1800s, you had two civil servants who were impeached after they resigned. And so that's where a lot of the argument's coming from, is that there's precedent. But when it comes to a president, there is no precedent to impeach a former president. It's kind of hard to say. It's a bit of a tongue twister there. So, you know, from our perspective, it's a complete political stunt. And I think that many conservatives see it as such.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, I listened to his speech. If anything, I thought it was a little on the flat side.
Yeah.
But there was certainly nothing in there about insurrection or violence. In fact, there was three times when he said, you know, about being peaceful and respecting law, that they're the party of the law and order and stuff. So, but when it gets to the Senate, shouldn't they actually have to prove that he incited someone? I mean, or does evidence just not matter once it gets to the Senate? I mean, in today's environment, I guess.
Yeah, it's supposed to matter. So the question of whether they can do it and whether the law supports it, like I said, that there's a disagreement among scholars with that. The question as to whether or not they can convict President Trump is a different story, right? And so, yes, they're supposed to present evidence. There's supposed to be a trial. I think that we all know that with the way that the Senate is right now, unfortunately, due to my state of Georgia, we are probably going to see a dog and pony show where it's going to be, you know, person after person being brought in, saying how it made them feel. And at the end of the day, no real evidence is going to be presented, because in reality, there is no evidence there to impeach him. You want to talk about impeachment? Let's talk about what Joe Biden has done in the past with respect to Ukraine, China. I mean, the list just goes on and on and on. And so we're just going to see another dog and pony show like we did the last time they did this.
Oh, absolutely. I think it'd be justice if they made all of those senators sit through the entirety of his speech. I think that would be kind of funny to make them listen to that. But all kidding aside, this is from Nancy Pelosi on Thursday morning announcing that she was getting ready to send over the article of impeachment. Quote, "I don't think it's very unifying to say, oh, let's just forget it and move on. That's not how you unify." I mean, this woman knows nothing about how to unify. I mean, so I guess in her mind, unity means submission now, one party rule?
Yeah, it does. That's how they're using the word. And it goes back to, I mean, it ties back into everything we've been talking about. This is all about compelling speech. And if you don't agree with what they're saying, you are a racist. You are divisive. You are a horrible person. You hate the environment. The list goes on, right? If you don't agree with them, you are bad. Plain and simple. And so the only way to have unity is by agreeing with them and falling in with the default ideology. They are weaponizing every one of these issues. They are weaponizing the word unity. And quite frankly, it's appalling, and they're doing it in every area. And compelled speech is going to be one of the biggest areas that we're going to be fighting, because it crosses over every single executive order and everything they're going to be doing for the next 4 years.
Well, you had mentioned re-education camps and whatnot, and mm-hmm. we've certainly seen that since the whole event at the Capitol back on the 6th, is that, you know, I actually remember back in 2017 when Trump was getting inaugurated, that the left was screaming that, oh, he wants to gel his political opponents. And I guess they were just shouting at the mirror, because that's what they're essentially, I mean, that's what they're trying to do, is gel their political opponents.
Yeah, that's exactly what they're trying to do. They want to make sure that Trump and anyone associated with him, anyone that supported him, whether it's your voter or whether it's a politician, is silenced. Hmm. That is their ultimate goal.
Yeah.
Silence everyone so that whatever they say is the right thing and the only thing.
Yeah.
And so much for diversity.
Yeah. so much for diversity.
Yeah.
Just real quick, in the time that I have left with you, Justice Roberts says he wants no part of this. And the discussion is that Kamala would preside as VP. I mean, how is that remotely constitutional? Again, we're back to Constitution. When the idea is that you have a nonpartisan Supreme Court justice oversee it, but yet Kamala is the height of partisanship.
She is the height of partisanship. And so if this happens, Justice Roberts needs to preside over it. I mean, plain and simple. I know we don't want the Supreme Court politicized, but that's how it's supposed to be done. And at the end of the day, I have faith that Justice Roberts will, of course, you know,
Court justice step in?
That's an excellent question. I suppose that he could
appoint somebody.
Possibly. I guess procedure could possibly be changed, but that's an excellent question. One, yeah. I think I might look up as soon as we get off from talking with each other.
Well, there we go. Cool. All right. Well, unfortunately, we are up against the clock.
Give me some homework there, Mark.
There you go. Something for next time. Okay. Well, Kimberly Herman, thank you so much for your time today.
Great to talk to you again.
I opened the show discussing the oligarchy of big government, big business, and big media. These three are just going to continue to feed off each other and feed each other. As each one grows bigger and more powerful, they will make the others more powerful as well. We've discussed some things today that you can be doing, but even if you feel like you can't, that it's just too big and too overwhelming for you personally, you can still help with the fight. Both of our guests today are from nonprofits, the Free Enterprise Project and the Southeastern Legal Foundation. See our website for links and information on how you can donate to them. They need your help to stay in the fight. Every army needs people on the front lines, but they also need support and provisions. And by helping them out, that will give you some hope, knowing that you did something. As for fighting back against big media, we can use your help too. Help spread the word about us, drop us a line of encouragement, and subscribe to our podcast. Because as we say every week, the best information does you no good if you don't use it. Reagan, what do you think?
I do not believe in a fate that will fall on us no matter what we do. I do believe in a fate that will fall on us if we do nothing.
It's more than a show. It's self-defense. The I Spy Radio Show.